How much of the world have you seen as a result of your rugby career?
That's probably one of the best perks of being a professional rugby player or international player. I've been everywhere. Very fortunate to have an opportunity to travel the world for rugby. I think I've been everywhere in the world really playing rugby, so it's something that I would say to any young player coming through. It's a great opportunity to travel the world.
And what impressions has that left you with of rugby in different parts of the world?
It's great, especially with how rugby's the profile shot up now. As you can see, all the sevens rugby that's going on in the World Series, the circuit that's going on, it's everywhere. To see that, it's good for the game, good for the fans. It can only go one way really, and then it's up. And as you can see, it's in the Olympics now, which is very good for rugby. And it's in South America, which is it's not very big over there with Brazil and that with football around. But it's good to see. It's good to see that it is going. Rugby's touching every corner of the globe. Really, it's not only just one part of the. That's everywhere now, which is amazing to see.
What strikes me is the handling skills of the minor countries in the sevens. It's quite remarkable.
Yes.
And you think, I had no idea, that such, rugby outposts, if you like, had such talented players. In the Olympics, it could be very interesting, actually.
Yes, definitely.
What happens?
I have to say, I wasn't even aware that rugby was played in places like Kenya.
Yeah.
So they've got a really good sevens.
Haven't they? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Credit to the coaches from the outside. They've gone in and developed rugby there, and they've turned out, as one of the threats in sevens rugby.
Well, and of course, for a long time, Pacific Islands have had a big reputation for sevens rugby.
Yep, no, definitely, especially in Fiji. Those guys that's what they do every day of the week. Just play sevens rugby, whether it's on the beach or on the field. With Samoa rugby at the moment, it's a bit disappointing with all the politics that's going on at the moment, and that's actually ruining the game in Samoa. We haven't got the right people in there. We haven't got the right programs put in place to develop the grassroots in Samoa. So, but there are programs that are going on at the moment. Hopefully that will turn it around, because our sevens this year hasn't been performing really well. But in Tonga, and that's another, they should be strong at sevens, but they're not even in the World Sevens Series. Once again, that's down to lack of funds and things like that. It's the lack of knowledge, lack of people. Right people to actually put those programs together and implement them and try and develop the game. It's unfortunately that's what's happening in the islands. Is the finance? I mean, the funds that goes in that's supposed to help with the development of the game is going in the wrong pockets, unfortunately. And that's what's killing the game in the islands.
What's your view on the relationship between the Pacific Islands and New Zealand on rugby?
Well, it's I can sit here and talk to you guys about with our relationship. I know most of the the All Blacks are all Samoan players. They've got Samoan parents, but it's another funny one really. But it's a tough one to call at the moment. That's because they, New Zealand, are taking all the players, rightly so, because they live in New Zealand, even though they're Samoans, but they actually qualify to play for the All Blacks. And now my problem is what's been happening with the Samoan team behind the scenes is putting players off to play for Samoa. Now, if we get that right behind the scenes, if we get the behind the scenes stuff right, and then we can, players will want to actually play for Samoa. But at the moment, it's just not happening because of the wrong people are in there at the moment. You know, they're there for themselves. They're not there for the good of rugby and Samoa. But, you know, I totally understand why New Zealand, why all the players have, even France have taken some of the Samoan players. There's a Samoan player from France, Manu Tuilagi, here in England. It's totally understandable because, you know, these guys are looking at their future. It's not because they don't want to play for our country. It's because, it's, you know, they're here because of their future. And like I said, you know, unless the personnel in Samoa changes, you know, we will see more and more guys playing for Ireland, you know, the home nation here, and the Six Nation, because due to the fact that they want to be financially sound, you know, they're looking out for the future.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, you know, but I got no, you know, quarrels. I got no problem with them playing for, you know, for teams here, because I understand. I understand why.
Yeah.
Why the reason why they're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about a Pacific Islands 15? I mean, that was that was taking off at one point, almost like the British Lions.
Yes.
But it seems to,
once again,
it died.
Yeah, it died because, once again, it's because people are not willing to.
It's the politics again, isn't it?
Politics, yeah. That's the, it's the only thing that kills the Pacific Island game. At the moment, it's just, we just haven't got the right people in place to implement those. If once, because it's not it's not professional enough. You know, the attitude towards it is not professional enough. People are in it for themselves, not, you know, for the money. They're not in it for the right reasons, and that's why you know, they can all talk about, yeah, why don't we have a Pacific Island team in there? It's because of that. We just don't seem to think, oh, you know, for the long term of the future of the game, that we, you know, there's people who don't think that way. All they think about is filling their pockets with money that don't belong to them. And at the end of the day, the young generation of the Pacific Islanders, they're the ones that suffer. And unless anything, you know, if nothing changes, I'm afraid that it's just going to die out.
That'd be a tragic loss to world rugby.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'll switch tactics. Coming back to Gloucester again, you know, obviously the most important thing is what happens out there on the pitch, but there's a social side to rugby. Tell us about the social side of rugby Gloucester.
Like I said to you guys earlier, it took me a while to get used to the banter here. But once I got, you know, I think that's one thing I do miss, is the banter between the boys. It's just relentless. It is carnage. It is just 24/7. There's no line. There is no line. We don't draw a line underneath anything. It's just no holds barred. Anything goes. And, you know, I found it difficult to get used to it, but once I got used to it, and then it was just amazing to see. You know, I think that's what made us really, really strong and close as well, is the way we used to tease each other. We take the mick out of each other. And I think our And it showed on the field the way we played as well. We, you know, we tend to go out and play for each other because it's still how close we got. And yeah, we were really close as with the guys. The social side of things, yeah, we used to. The my favourite part was after games we would go and eat down in the old bar, the old stadium that was here. Now they would open the sliding doors up to the fans, and then the fans will come in, and we'll go up there and mingle with the fans, have a few drinks with them. At the same time, everyone's together at that time, and we used to do the pub crawl down when we play at home. We used to start at Dean's, and then we'll make our way up to town towards we used to do all the bars, and then end up the Jumping Jacks. To me, one of my favourite parts as well was, you know, social, being social with the guys. We used to stick together after the game, win, lose or draw. We used to be up downstairs, mingle with the fans, have something to eat, and then walk up together, up to town. And I think nowadays, I don't think they do that anymore, do they?
Who were the ringleaders?
Well, it was Andy Deacon, isn't he? Andy Deacon and Glamis, they were the two instigators, you know. Deeks used to collect all the money for the kitty. Never put anything in the kitty, but he pretended that he has. And Gladys will probably be the first one at the bar. Because he's the one that, he's not shy of a few sherbys, a few pints himself. So by the time we get, you know, and that's just great being together. It's just that mentality that we stick together, and the team camaraderie and things like that. Team spirit was awesome, because at the same time when we were in town or we were walking into, we used to take the mick out of each other anyway. So obviously those were good days, actually enjoyed it.
I think some things hadn't changed. I was the Players Association were kind enough to invite me along to their Christmas dinner you know, this last Christmas, and Pete Glanville was there, and you know, we were standing around having a beer or two beforehand, and I got my beer, and I'd only managed to suck the froth off it,
and it was
Pete Glanville was saying, "You ready for another one?"
You're not wrong there. No, yeah, definitely. He's, I think he's one of the probably one of the big drinkers that we had in our team was, yeah, as Pete. When there's beer or cider to be drunk, yeah, he'll be the first one there. He's not scared of it.
Yeah.